This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Right now, one of the highlights of the latest Pixar animation, The Incredibles, is the diminutive Edna Mode, or E for short. She may be small, but she has a diva-sized personality. Fashion designer extraordinaire for the superhero world, she's also a bit of an instigator in this film about a former superhero family gone underground in the suburbs. The all-star cast of voices includes Craig T. Nelson as Mr. Incredible, Holly Hunter as Mrs. Incredible, Sarah Vowell as daughter Violet, and the incredibly talented Brad Bird as Edna. Brad who, you might ask, and why is he the voice of Edna? Well, you can ask those questions and any others you may have for Brad about the movie The Incredibles. He's our guest today, so give us a call at 800-989-TALK and email address totn@npr.org. And Brad Bird joins us now from the studio at the University of California at Berkeley. He's not just the voice of Edna. He is an animator and the writer, director of The Incredibles. Thanks so much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
This is your first film with Pixar, is that correct? I know you've done a lot of other things, including you worked on The Simpsons, The Critic, The King of the Hill, just to name a few of the things you've worked on. But this is your first for Pixar, is that right?
It is, and I had a great time.
And were there any challenges involved in making the switch to Pixar where the animation is computer-generated, or had you done that before?
Well, my previous film, The Iron Giant, the giant was computer. We used a computer to animate the giant, but everything else in it was hand-drawn. So this is my first one that was entirely used, where we used the computer all the way through. But there were a lot of challenges. A lot of it had to do with just understanding what things were while they were being built, because you would have these review sessions where you just looked at a blue void or something like that, and then there would be the character impaled by a naked version of the character. and they would just say, don't look at that. And it was really hard not to look at it, because it was so. But so the computer is a very strange tool. It's either brilliant or it's crazy.
Yeah. And do you write the script first and then do the animation? I mean, how does it all work?
I write the script first. We board out the scenes, kind of a comic strip version of the film, and commit that to film with camera moves and stuff, and use our own voices to kind of plan it out. And then we, as we go into animation, we record the real actors. In fact, that's how my voice for Edna sort of came to be, as I was doing two or three temporary voices, and everyone just liked that one, so we ended up leaving it in.
Do you ever do it, if somebody asks you to do it?
Yeah, I suppose. I like to have it come out of the little character. But since we're on radio, I think. Oh, yeah.
Yes, darling, what do you want? This is too early in the morning for me.
How did that voice become Edna in your mind?
I don't know. You're just, when you do these things, you're just trying to get in the ballpark of what you imagine. And when I was describing the character to the designers who were going to design how she looked, I kept falling into this voice, and I had written her lines at that point, but I would kind of find myself falling into this voice when I was describing her. I'd say, she should be kind of short, but she has a big personality, and she's like this. She comes into a room and overtakes it, and they would just kind of, I mean, that was strangely helpful to them. So I can't tell you.
All right, we also have a clip from the film of Edna, so let's listen to that as well.
Your boy's suit are designed to withstand enormous friction without heating up or wearing out, a useful feature. Your daughter's suit was tricky, but I finally created a sturdy material that will disappear completely as she does. Your suit can stretch as far as you can without injuring yourself and still retain its shape. Virtually indestructible. Yet it breathes like Egyptian cotton.
One of the challenges of this film, as I understand it, this was the first digitally generated, computer animation with human characters that Pixar has ever done.
Well, Pixar's had humans before in their films, but this is the first one where the entire cast was humans.
And why is that harder than when you do the little animals?
the little animals. Oh, man. No, I just mean when you're an animator, you never escape the tyranny of the little animals. But it is hard because everyone knows how humans move. Mm-hmm. And whether they are aware that they know or not, they're much more critical of how humans move. In other words, if you do your homework and you study footage of a dog moving around or something like that, and you kind of study up, and you can get in the ballpark enough to convince most people that you know what you're doing. If you're trying to do a human, it becomes a lot more finicky, mm-hmm. because people are around them all the time. You know, they are a human. So, I mean, your audience is human. So everyone is really well versed on how they move, how their weight shifts, and all that. If you're only trying to be funny, like The Simpsons, it doesn't matter. You know, you just get in the roughly in the ballpark, you know, make them stand on two legs and walk with one leg in front of the other. You're okay. But the moment that you need to put them in jeopardy, where you have to convince the audience to worry about them, that's really hard to do in animation because people are used to animated characters taking dynamite in the faces and just shaking it off.
Yeah.
So if you want the audience to worry about the fate of your animated characters and they're humans, it becomes very tricky because you want to exaggerate and have fun with it, but you also want to be believable and convincing.
Well, what was interesting about the film for me was that at a certain point you didn't exactly forget you were watching an animated film, but you did on the other hand. I mean, you got so caught up in it that it was just you were just watching a movie. You were just watching a story.
We've been told that a lot, and I really, that makes me feel all warm and fuzzy inside. Because
you forgive me for the little animal remark now?
No, I do. I forgive you completely. No, that's what we're after. I mean, I think most animators are looking forward to the day when animation will just be considered film. Because you still have to deal with characters. You still have to follow their thinking. You still have to do performances and convince the audience that a character is feeling something and going through a mental process. As a director, you still select camera angles. You still time the editing. You still ask the composer, tell him what kind of music you feel at the moment. You're controlling color. It's all the same stuff. Just how you put it up there is a little different. But it's seen as sort of a junior version of film. Film junior. You're kind of always seated at the kids' table. And after a while, you kind of go, well, you know, come on. We're filmmakers too.
We're talking with Brad Bird. He's animator and writer and director of The Incredibles. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 800-989-8255. And we're going to take a call now from Michelle in Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I had two things. One was, when I saw the movie, I was practically convinced that the character is based on the real costume designer in Hollywood named Edith Head. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Well, actually, not her specifically, but more a type of character. And Edith was part of that type. One of the most interesting things about showing the film around the world is that everyone is convinced that he is modeled after someone specific. But who they mention changes from country to country. I've heard Coco Chanel. I've heard Edith Head. I've heard some woman that deals with Vanity Fair or something. I've heard Patricia Highsmith. I've heard Linda Hunt. I've heard there's some Japanese man designer.
Yes.
that everyone is convinced that it's modeled after in Japan. And everyone is absolutely convinced that who they think the character is modeled after is, in fact, who I think the character is
modeled
after.
And it's funny because I thought it was the actress Linda Hunt. That was my...
Well, you know, she's in the top 20.
Okay. Did you say you had another question, Michelle?
Well, then you've clearly discovered a new archetype.
Thank you.
And the other point was I was saddened and disappointed by how predictable the individual characters are. You know, Mrs. Incredible is sort of feminism light. Mr. Incredible is sort of nice but still a jerk. And the two kids are so depressingly stereotyped by gender. Just wanted to let you know, still enjoyed the movie. Do better next time.
Okay, thanks for your call, Michelle.
I feel properly scolded.
As well you should, Brad. We're talking with Brad Bird. He's the animator, writer, and director of The Incredibles, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's take another call and see how they feel about the film, Brad. Steve in Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi, Mr. Berg. I actually love the film and love the characters. And
well, thanks. I ought to send you over to the last caller's house. Go school her on what to do there.
Well, I had a similar question about the characters, actually. My wife and I have a 2-year-old and experienced a similar feeling as The Incredibles with our little boy. Just as Dash runs around so quickly, we find ourselves chasing our little one. I'm wondering if you yourself have a toddler or base that character on a family that does.
Yeah, I have 3 little boys, so I've had that experience times 3. The idea of the characters was to use their powers to kind of explore archetypes. So the father is in the family is always expected to be strong. The mother is always stretched in a million different directions. Teenagers are insecure, so I had her power be invisibility. And 10-year-old boys are hyperactive energy balls, so I had him move really fast. And babies are sort of unrealized potential.
So we won't give away, though, for those who haven't seen it, what the baby's power is.
All right.
Because that's kind of
even
if he has powers, that's right. We won't give that away. Thanks so much for your call. Let's see if we can get another call in here before the end of the show. Lee in Texas. Hi, Lee.
Hi. I enjoyed The Incredibles, but the thing I wanted to bring up was The Iron Giant. I've always thought that it's one of the best American animated features I've ever seen, and I've always been somewhat astounded by the fact that you got that movie completed and made it such quality, considering that Warner Brothers' animation division was disintegrating around you as you did it.
Right. Well, I think in some ways that's what enabled us to do it.
It's an amazing piece of work. I'm very impressed with it. I also enjoyed The Incredibles, don't get me wrong. But do you feel a certain degree of vindication now that you've got Pixar behind you and you're getting such attention that people are rediscovering that movie?
Yes, that's been very gratifying. You know, people were starting to rediscover it anyway, and this has just helped a lot because it's kind of made people say, "Well, we like this. What else did he do?" And several members of our Iron Giant crew came up with me to also work on Incredibles. I think that it's very much a Pixar film, but also has a heavy Iron Giant flavor.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Lee.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you about one other thing about the film that I found fascinating was the scenes, the background scenes. And I read that, like, in Finding Nemo, there were something like 20 background scenes. And in this film,
there
were like 200 sets.
Well, yeah.
How many were there? 200 or?
Not quite that many, but there were about 5 or 6 times the number of sets as Nemo. And that was just an unbelievable, you know, chore to get all that stuff done and not have it, you know, take 10 times longer and cost 10 times more. So that was kind of a lot of trickery involved in that and a lot of, you know, cold sweats.
Yeah. Do you sometimes, when you're doing animation, though, we were talking before about people thinking it was Edith Head or Linda Hunt, the character. Do you have an actress in mind sometimes? I know with Finding Nemo, I think they did have Ellen DeGeneres in mind from the start.
Every once in a while, you hear someone's voice when you're writing something. On Iron Giant, I absolutely wanted Chris McDonald to do the paranoid government guy, Kent Mansley, and he wasn't a sexy choice for Warner Brothers because even though he's very widely respected, they feel that the average moviegoer is not going to see the movie because Chris McDonald's voice is in it. Well, I would argue that most people don't go to movies to hear voices anyway, that voices are sometimes great actors are the right choice and sometimes actors that you are not so familiar with are the right choice, that it's mainly about making the right choice.
All right.
So I think sometimes, yes.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us. It was really fun talking to you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Animator Brad Bird wrote and directed the latest Disney Pixar animation, The Incredibles. He joined us from the studio on the campus of UC Berkeley in California. In Washington, I'm Lynn Neary, NPR News.